Dr. Sam White, you are I've seen a bunch of videos and a few people who we've interviewed, including Sally Beck, who is a journalist from Great Britain, have alerted me to your case. So I'm really happy that you're with us today. Would you introduce yourself? Because I have too few, I have too little about you on my little sheet here.
Okay. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. Thank you, Ryan. It's very nice, such a privilege to join you today for this sort of tribunal hearing. I'm a primary care doctor. I've been a doctor for 17 years. Soon into the pandemic, if you like, I was wary of the narrative that was being told. I was a partner in a primary care practice in a lovely semi-rural practice, had everything going for me in that regard. The NHS, which is, we have a socialized system of healthcare, the NHS mandated that our doors be closed and all consultations must be done by telephone triage unless absolutely necessary. And essentially it meant that anyone with respiratory symptoms was not allowed in the surgery. At the same time, PCR tests were being used indiscriminately without appropriate clinical assessment and a diagnosis being made then of COVID, in perhaps even in the absence of anyone having any symptoms, which was absurd. We in the UK were one of the first countries to roll out the vaccines, if you want to call them vaccines. I really don't like to call them that. And it was the Pfizer vaccine. And I said to my fellow doctor colleagues that I didn't want any parts in administering the vaccine, principally because I was aware of the SARS-CoV-1 trials in animals and the risk of antibody-dependent enhancement. And so I didn't partake. In the new year, it became clear that they were going to vaccinate ever younger populations of the public who were at no risk of COVID. There could be no informed consent since there was no medium to long-term data, and we had no idea what the benefit was. So the culmination of that was that I resigned from my very nice practice and position, and in a 3-page email outlined all of my concerns in my letter of resignation. In June of this year, someone had asked on social media, what are all the doctors doing about this? I rarely used social media, but something triggered me, and it was anger and frustration at all of the lies, which I'm sure your team are well aware of, that have been told, and the immense wrong and harm that has been done to people all over the world, and especially here in the UK. And in that sort of 8-minute video, I called out the main lies, if you like. And unbeknownst to me, that went viral. And over 1 million people saw it, I believe. A couple of weeks later, I got an email to say that I was suspended with immediate effect from all work within the National Health Service. I was then telephoned the following day. I managed to have my dictaphone to hand, so recorded the conversation. And I was called by a senior clinical advisor to NHS England. She didn't reference my social media as being the reason for my suspension, as was mentioned in the email, but she said that they were concerned that I had a health problem. It was clear, obviously, from my videos that I was not physically incapacitated in any way. And so they had made a determination that I was mentally unwell. And the subsequent freedom of information that we accessed was that I was suffering from a profound disorder of mental ill health for citing the things that I did in my video. Last week, I had a tribunal which was commissioned essentially by the General Medical Council, which is the regulatory body here in the UK. That tribunal is meant tribunal, but it essentially upheld all of the allegations that were made against me by the GMC, being that I had quoted in my video misinformation. This tribunal didn't consider any evidence. They said that they weren't there to do that. But everything in my video is evidence-based. It was also supported by expert witness testimony. So what they've done now is said that I can no longer comment on social media about any aspects of the pandemic, and I have restrictions placed on my practice for a further 18 months pending a full trial by the GMC. So essentially in breach of my human rights to freedom of speech. Now, when we consider that my video was seen by so many people, I'd like to add that all of my concerns, plus a lot more, was expressed in writing to both NHS England and the General Medical Council. Every 5 years, doctors in the UK, and this came about largely as a result of Harold Shipman, were required to relicense. Okay, so earlier in the year, I was relicensed, having submitted a body of 5 years worth of work. The last year of work included all of my discussion about the pandemic, including all of what I saw as lies, citing references, the harms caused by masks, the indiscriminate use of PCR, the purposeful withholding of proven therapeutics, experimental gene-based vaccines in breach of informed consent, everything. I'd even cited the World Economic Forum and the fact that I felt that doctors were unwitting participants in their agenda for a great reset, if you like. So those documents were submitted to the GMC and signed off by what is known as a responsible person on behalf of the GMC. That same person was then responsible for suspending me. What I'm saying is that my views, my research, wasn't a problem for NHS England or the General Medical Council when in written form and essentially undisclosed to the public. Mm-hmm. They were a big problem when a million plus people saw my video. That's when I was in trouble. They weren't concerned before that. And I was relicensed for another 5 years until 2026. So that's where I am at the moment. And my story of being persecuted for speaking out is typified and exemplified around the world. I've just literally, found that there's an Australian doctor facing similar allegations. There's another doctor that my legal team are representing in the UK who's also been suspended. If people want to visit my website, drsamwhite.com, I've got an interview there with Dr. Thomas Binder in Switzerland, who was raided by the SWAT team and locked in a padded cell for 6 days, simply for saying the same things that I have and many doctors have. So the real problem we've got is not just everything that's happened with the pandemic, but we've got a systemic failure of doctors to be able to voice their concerns and alert the general public to the harms and wrongs that are being committed in the name of our profession. Okay, so when my video went viral, many doctors came forward and said, "You're very brave." And I didn't really know what they meant by that. I didn't consider myself brave in any way. But what they meant was, "You're brave to speak out because there's going to be retribution for you based on that." And that should never be the case. Along with everything that myself and my legal team have been doing, we submitted a 23-page letter to Sir Simon Stevens, who's the head of the NHS here in England. A copy also went to Parliament, to the Medicines Health and Regulation Authority, and that has not received a reply. And again, that called out all of the wrongs and harms that are being done in the name of this pandemic, which has an incredibly high survival rate, as you know. And people in this country have been experimented on, essentially. And we are now heading into the autumn winter season and still have no access to successful proven treatments like ivermectin, which would be life-saving.
Sam, I've seen some of the people who suffered the same consequences as you did, but in view of that and in light of that, I first want to tell you, I want to congratulate you on what you did and express my gratitude, plus my respect. We need more people like you, many more, and I think that is happening right now. I told our viewers at the start of this session that I had a long Zoom call last night with a group of very, very influential representatives of municipal workers in the city of San Francisco. One third of the police force is not going to go along with that. One third of the firefighters will not go along with that. 30,000 out of 60,000 public employees in Los Angeles will not go along with this. People are beginning to rise up. That is going to send a very, very loud signal. So in view of that, I think you are part of this and you have motivated some of these people, because they've seen your video, you have motivated them to come forward, to step forward and not play along with this. These are definitely, and there can not be any doubt about this anymore, these are definitely crimes against humanity that are being committed. This has nothing to do with health, as you pointed out. It's the Great Reset that is being rolled out here as an agenda, which is anti-human, anti-democratic, anti-everything that makes us human. Do you have enough support in England? Because I know I've heard from Sally Beck, for example, that the situation is quite different from what the mainstream media here in Germany are trying to make us believe, that there are lots of people out in the streets, not every day, but I've seen some. Actually, one of my speeches was shown on Trafalgar Square a couple of weeks ago, and I could see that there are hundreds of thousands of people, not just 17,000 as the BBC tried to make people believe. Do you have enough support from the people in England and, of course, from lawyers?
I've had an overwhelming amount of support from the public, I should say that. One of the issues has been that over the years, in my 17 years, I've paid thousands and thousands of pounds for professional insurance, not having to ever use it. So as soon as I was suspended by the NHS and then facing a trial, I called them up and sent them the documents and everything. And they said that they wouldn't help me. This is my medical defense union. They are called the MDU. They wouldn't help me because they said it was a conduct issue, nothing to do with negligence, if you like. And as far as I'm aware, that's not been the case before. Doctors who've had conduct issues such as helping themselves to drugs have been helped and supported. But there seems to be a coordinated effort for the legal insurance companies not to help doctors who will take to social media and speak out. So my lawyer is essentially working pro bono, and my barrister has halved his rate, and we started a legal fund, not just to support me in that regard, but also to challenge things like the vaccine passports, mandating vaccines for care workers, which is something that Parliament passed quite happily, and also to prevent their use in children. you know, a child is more likely to be struck by lightning than come to harm from COVID. So the idea that you would ever even put them through a clinical trial for this is criminal. Criminal beyond belief. I don't know how much time you have, Rainer, but I would very much like to read to you the allegations made by the GMC to me, which were upheld last week by the tribunal.
We have enough time, Sam.
We have enough time. Okay. So the first one is that I said that the government and the NHS were lying. Okay. That's the allegation, and I stand by that, obviously. And I go into reasons why and all of the evidence base for that, along with, as I said, we have expert witness testimony. The other next allegation is that I claim that doctors and nurses were having their hands tied behind their backs and that we were unable to use proven effective treatments. So if you think just for a minute that many of those who died, particularly early on in the nursing home scandal, were vitamin D deficient. You know, these are elderly, frail people who wouldn't get much sunlight, and that doesn't exist too often in the UK anyway. So simply vitamin D and zinc would have been, you know, great for them. The next allegation is that I named hydroxychloroquine, budesonide and ivermectin as drugs that are proven and safe. Again, I stand by that. It's all evidence-based. The use of ivermectin, which blocks the binding of the spike protein to the ACE2 receptors, would be absolutely life-changing for thousands, millions of people in this country and around the world. And yet people cannot get it. They're not allowed it. And doctors aren't even allowed to talk about it. The next allegation is that I went on to raise concerns about the safety of the vaccines. Now, there's enough evidence so far, to my mind, and, you know, I've obviously chatted with Dr. Peter McCulloch as well, to say that these vaccines, if we're going to call them that, should be halted immediately. We've had enough deaths, we've had enough injuries a long, long time ago. They should never, ever have been put into use when at the same time proven therapeutics were available. And the next allegation is that I went on to raise concerns about the need for people to have the COVID-19 vaccine and that I didn't mention the variety of vaccines available and claimed that the vaccine inserted a code for the spike protein. Well, unfortunately for the GMC, they do. They all involve use of the spike protein, which is the pathogenic determinant of what makes people sick from COVID-19. I said that, this is the next allegation, that 99% of people who contract COVID-19 survive, and most of those who died have suffered from multiple medical problems. Now, this is an allegation they're making against me for false information, which was upheld last week. Now, in that video where I cited 99%, I actually hugely underestimate it. The infection fatality rate is 0.026%. It's, you know, this isn't a pandemic. We haven't had excess deaths, excess hospital admissions. The next allegation is that I asked viewers to do their own research and that I signposted them to the VAERS reporting system in the US and the yellow card data, as well as the European Union's database. So why shouldn't people be allowed to do their own research and look up what the adverse events are, knowing that these adverse events that are reported to these systems reflect only a fraction of adverse events and deaths that are happening? I asked viewers then to consider the deaths and serious side effects the vaccine was causing. The numbers speak for themselves. This is the biggest experiment to ever occur in human history without a robust reporting system. So in the UK, we have the yellow card system, which was introduced after the thalidomide scandal. Now, millions of people have received this experimental vaccine, and it's been done in an uncontrolled way. It's not been done in a scientific way to follow them up properly and check for adverse events. So you've got these very subjective reporting systems which vastly underestimate what's happening. I then went on to raise concerns about the use of a PCR test and the high false positive rate, and that the fraud associated with using these PCR tests vitiates everything. Well, of course it does, because if you're using a test which was never designed to be used in a pandemic or for an acute respiratory illness, and then you're also using it in the absence of a clinical diagnosis, what is happening is that people with no symptoms, no actual disease or acute respiratory illness, are then being confined to their homes, unable to work. It's not about medicine. It's never been about medicine. I then discussed that common law rights of individuals were being breached by governments in the name of their regulations and mandates. I stand by that. Everyone has a right to earn a living. And then my final claim was that masks do absolutely nothing. Of course, we now have plenty of evidence to suggest that not only do face coverings, which could simply be a bandana in the UK, to be honest, that's, you know, what people have been told, they cause harm. And in children, we see dangerous levels of carbon dioxide retention, for instance. That's now been proven. And then they say that I suffer from a mental health illness. This is out without any clinical assessment by them, which has resulted in paranoid and disinhibited behavior. So when they talk about disinhibited behavior, they're not just talking about a minor mental health illness. They're referring to a profound impairment of my mental health judgment and reasoning. And then they've put here that I used my NHS computer to access the dark web, which is one of the funniest things, actually, because as anyone who's followed me on social media knows, I'm pretty useless with the light web. A few weeks ago, 3-4 weeks ago, we wrote to my former practice, my lawyer did, to ask for a full forensic examination of my computer to prove that I wasn't doing anything like that. They've not responded to that. So those are all the allegations against me. And I think, given the evidence you've heard over the last year almost, Dr. Formich, yeah, you'll be aware that everything I've said is actually based in scientific reason. It's evidence-based, largely peer-reviewed. It's backed now by expert witness testimony. And yet, for saying these things, I have a profound mental health problem.
Well, if you have a profound mental health problem, then I wonder what those who are calling you mentally ill, what they suffer from. It can't just be that they didn't take enough pills. There has to be much more to it. But in the meantime, Sam, you have been, whatever you're saying has been confirmed by every single one of the experts who we listen to, as far as the PCR test is concerned, as far as alternative treatments is concerned, as far as that this virus, whatever it is, be it natural or man-made or part natural, we don't know. But this virus is no more dangerous than the common flu, at an infection with an infection fatality rate of between 0.14 and 0.15%, more than 99% survival rate. Statistically speaking, no danger for anyone under probably the age of 40, at least for children. Absolutely no danger. So why subject them to the risk of getting the jabs, which are definitely not vaccines, as we know. So you've been confirmed. And the one thing that is still missing is a full-fledged trial. And I think that's why they averted this. That's why they did this behind closed doors, hoping that the rest of the world will not find out about it. But now they have found out about it. And now millions of people all over the world will know what's going on and will know that you're still walking tall. What a perfect example of what a man is supposed to be.
Thank you very much. Thank you. We obviously, because they've imposed sanctions on me, which breach my human rights to free speech, my barrister, who's working at half rate, and we've got a legal fund for me, but also to put into place measures to stop the vaccine passports, to stop the use of these gene therapies in children, and to protect care home workers as well. So I don't know if there's some way you could share that legal fund for us, but that would be incredible because you have obviously a far reach. But if my human rights to free speech is breached, even if I was wrong, that sets a dangerous precedent. And unfortunately for NHS and for the General Medical Council, they have quite a horrendous record of treating whistleblowers to the extent that the crimes that the whistleblowers allege carry on and are perpetuated for a number of years before they're finally vindicated. And there's, you know, numerous cases that have happened. You'll be well aware of people like Dr. Shipman. There was a doctor local to here who was using excessive amounts of morphine to kill people. And there was one hospital trust in North Staffordshire where it had an extremely high death rate. The person that called that out, Sally probably told you about, spent 7 years being persecuted by the General Medical Council, only to later be vindicated. But in those 7 years, of course, many more people died.
So outrageous. Can I ask you, has there been like a positive reaction also from doctors who are not out in the open yet?
Yes and no. So I'm a member of various scientific groups and research groups, that's largely done quite secretively. And in renewing my medical defense union subscription, they took exception to my membership of the Health and Recovery Advisory Group. Okay. And that's really just a group of doctors and scientists getting together to discuss things. In the UK, it does seem to be that there's quite a degree of cognitive dissonance among the medical profession about what these vaccines are and what has happened. And I think if we think back to how Dr. Andrew Wakefield was treated, and you know it, that went on for a number of years, it's to the point where people are too scared to come forward and say anything about vaccines. The other point to keep in mind is that doctors themselves who've been giving these vaccines, I'm afraid to say, in the absence of fully informed consent, will most likely have received them themselves. So they could also potentially be victims of this.
And what's the general mood in the public now? Can you see that it's shifting toward more doubt?
If you look at the rallies in London, which are a good gauge, they have got bigger and bigger and bigger. However, we are dealing with a majority population which is vaccinated. Among those people who are vaccinated, it might be very difficult to then accept that you've been deceived to accept that come this autumn, winter time, you could be at an increased risk of this COVID-19. I believe you've already spoken to Dr. Tess Laurie of Bird in the UK. Mm-hmm. her systematic review made clear that those who've been vaccinated as well as the unvaccinated will need access to ivermectin come this autumn winter season, because these vaccines, you know, we saw in The Lancet that the absolute risk reduction with them is close to negligible. And that's if you overcome the vast number of side effects and adverse events.
That's a real problem. The fact that all of you, not just almost, but all of the experts who we spoke with, including Mike Eden, including Professor Bhakti, including, of course, Dr. Vodak, who is with us right now, everyone agrees, Luc Montagnier from France, everyone agrees that there's at least a very, very high risk of, for example, ADE and autoimmune problems that'll start in the fall, winter, and spring, and it'll probably spread over the next couple of years or so. But there is a very high risk, and that means that at that point, you will finally be vindicated, but it's going to cost a lot of lives, maybe, and it's going to be very destructive. So, what we really need in the winter, fall, and spring is probably doctors and hospitals who can still help. And I'm afraid that those who have gotten vaccinated will not be in a position to still help. We're actively working on buying a hospital or more than one hospital that specializes in adverse events. That's why, and we're in touch with doctors and nurses who don't want to get vaccinated, who are not just willing but very happy to work at such an institution. I think that's what we're really need to focus on. And the other thing that we really need to focus on is, of course, that we have to avoid allowing the other side to continue with splitting our society in half, which is what's happening in the United States. It's probably not quite as bad in England, or maybe it's even worse because it's more than half the people who are still on the official or with the official line. Here it's changing. It's changing. More and more people are beginning to have doubts because it's impossible to cover up all these adverse events that are happening. But that's the next big thing that is about to happen. We have to keep alerting people's attention to the fact that what's going to happen in the fall, winter, and spring is not a result of any virus, but it is a result of the vaccinations, the so-called vaccinations. So, yeah, okay.
Yeah. And I think this is a time for unity. Whichever side of the fence you're on, whether you've been vaccinated or not, we need to come together and make available, especially for the vulnerable, the drugs that actually work for this. And I sat on committee the other night with people like Pierre Corey to discuss how we're going to find solutions to mitigating vaccine injuries and what is actually occurring. For a start, we need to be doing postmortems to find out, you know, because that's not happening in the UK. Mm.
And is this like actively, is that prohibited, or like how they're dealing with this? Because we have, you know, we have letters from like district attorneys telling their, the other district, like, you know, higher up district attorneys, like kind of writing letters that there should not be any, autopsies. Is that the same in the UK? Is that,
or yeah, like even from the government? As far as I'm aware, that started immediately at the same time as the pandemic. Also, I don't know if you're aware, but when cremation paperwork is completed, you would ordinarily have one doctor who knows the patient and then a second doctor who doesn't know the patient, who would then review the case. They did away with the need for a part two doctor. So they made it incredibly easy for doctors, and I never did so, to put COVID-19 on a death certificate based on not ever, perhaps have ever having seen that person, and so post-mortem's not being done. I've seen Dr. Ryan Cole's very excellent presentation. He's part of America's Frontline Doctors, yeah. Great top pathologist. And we need more of that to, sorry to say, but to wake people up and to learn. That's how we learn in medicine, when new therapies are put forward or when there's a new disease or illness. That's the best way we can learn.
May I have a question?
Yeah, Wolfgang?
Yes, I'm very interested in the case of ivermectin and where it helps and where it doesn't. But if you have an ADE, do you think ivermectin is still working?
I'm not an expert on that, but given that my understanding is that it blocks the binding of the spike protein receptors to the ACE2 receptors, I would think it would go a long way to helping that, along with other drugs. I mean, what you also want to do is to stop the storm of cytokines. So you would perhaps want to use histamine blocking drugs. Most of our histamine receptors are located at the blood-brain barrier. So people often get brain fog and brain fatigue when they get COVID, and they are complaining of that post-vaccination also. So stabilizing mast cells with antihistamines, simple antihistamines, could potentially go a long way. But we need that research, and we need to get going with that right away.
You know, when there are possibilities to reduce the contact with the virus, which are not dangerous. So if you use something, the virus normally comes through the upper respiratory organ, so yeah. The nose and the throat, and normally does not enter the blood. The virus is defended there, locally.
Yeah. Yeah.
So ivermectin is, and the ACE2 receptor is blocking there. So it is already too late when the virus reaches those ACE2 receptors in the body. So I think if you want to defend people, even if it's the second time in case to prevent ADE, we should focus on preventing the virus to enter the body.
Yeah.
And there are much simpler methods to do that, and yeah. to reduce the load of viruses. Here, where I am here, they use some plants, some herb thing with oily herb things to yeah. reduce it. So there are different possibilities, which would be rather interesting to find out if you do it, if you are in the season where the virus comes, and you reduce the virus load by having each day some nice, well-tasting tea, which may protect you. I think it would be a very easy way. So we should just, I think when we think of ivermectin, we think of the worst case already. We think of those rare cases where the virus succeeds to enter the body. Mm-hmm. And we know we don't get ill because, normally we don't get ill with coronavirus because the virus does not succeed to get into the blood.
Yeah, the innate immune system deals with it, and it's working all the time in our favor. Yeah, absolutely. And of course, by the latter stages, when you've got the storm of cytokines and people are desaturating, the chances are that you need to be thinking about anticoagulation, because that's when they're developing these thromboembolic events in the pulmonary vasculature, at least.
But not with heparin. This could be dangerous.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, is there, did we miss anything that you want our viewers to know?
I think that's a perfect summary of all of the misinformation that I've been accused of spreading, and my mental derangement.
yeah, which is so obvious to us. Yeah, right.
Viewers can judge for themselves.
Yeah. Yes, viewers can judge for themselves. Well, Sam, it was... under the circumstances, it was a real pleasure, and we're really proud and honored to have been able to interview you. Thank you very much for your time. If you are not in touch with Mike Yeadon yet, okay, good. Or we have a colleague from India. Her name is Deepali Oja. She's a member of the Indian Bar Association. And they have some really good rulings which may be applicable on ivermectin, on the use of ivermectin, which may be applicable in the UK as well. So if you want me to get your lawyers or you in touch with, put you in touch with Deepali, I'll do that.
That'd be lovely. And I could share with Tess Laurie as well.
Excellent. Yeah.
Tarek, but yeah, brilliant.
Okay.
Brilliant. I love that. It's been such an honor to be with you today. Thank you very much for the time.
Thank you, Sam. Thank and you the best of luck. I know you'll win.
Thank you very much. Thank
okay.
you. Bye now.
Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.
Bye.